Investable Universe is about thematic topics in real assets investing. This is what we mean by the global market of things: real estate, infrastructure, land, energy, and other commodities that have historically been viewed as boring old income investments. But take a look at the shifts underway in these asset classes, from industry disruptors to new investors to emerging markets to geopolitics, and you'll find these assets are very interesting. We'll talk about private equity, venture capital, corporate VC, sovereign wealth funds, listed markets, crazy startups, some old guard investment firms, some maverick entrepreneurs, and some paradigm-shifting technologies. One thing is certain, no corner of the global market of things will be left untouched by the changes happening right now, and that's what we talk about on this podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the state of the art of precision farming and agriculture. This has been a major, major, major area of venture capital and institutional investment in recent years, and one of the most exciting fields in R&D, with massive real-life implications in terms of feeding the globe and mitigating environmental impacts. Global investment in agri-food tech companies topped $22 billion last year. This is according to PitchBook data, and 2021 is well on track to beating that number. For perspectives, I'm turning to Mary Fredrickson Tangen, Vice President of Agriculture Strategic Initiatives at DTN, the global firm that provides commodity market analysis, hyperlocal weather forecasts, and agronomic insights for guiding planting, growing, and harvesting operations. Mary has more than 20 years of experience in software as a service and data businesses, and her executive role at DTN connects her to the company's more than 2 million global customers across agriculture, energy, financial, and weather-sensitive industries. In addition to her decades of data and precision ag expertise, she is a grower operating a cattle, feeder, corn, and soy farm with her family in Northwest Iowa. She's an agricultural economist by training. Mary, thank you for joining Investable Universe today.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for having me. This is going to be great because I love talking about smart farming. Here's my question. From where you sit, are we on the cusp of a golden age of artificial intelligence in agriculture?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Let's hear it. What's going to happen? What's going to happen in this brave new world?
Yeah. So, if you kind of take a look back, precision agriculture, like what we term as precision agriculture, has been around, oh goodness. I mean, some people would say 30 to 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. Just collecting the data off the field. But there's too many layers to do anything with. Majority of the data that's collected on the field isn't even analyzed, accessed, not even used. Mm-hmm. So now with AI and just how everything's cheaper to process all the data, the gigabytes, whatever the big number is now, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It's so much cheaper. People are smarter and can analyze the data. So yes, and you're already seeing it. I mean, mm-hmm. This isn't really AI, but when you think about auto steers, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody makes a big deal about auto steer and their self-driving cars. Agriculture mm-hmm. has had that for 15, 20 years, right? And mm-hmm. their tractors and combines. So it's just, yes, we are on the cusp of it. And I think we're actually to the point of kind of making that shift instead of just saying, hey, we have all this data, we have cool analytics, mm-hmm. but we're actually going to make we say operational insights here. It's actually going to make a difference to the mm-hmm. farmer. That's what I see coming. So
you mentioned that some of these smart farming technologies have actually been around in farming for quite some time. But what is the most disruptive breakthrough that you've observed at DTN recently? If you were to say, like, if you were to pinpoint, okay, like, this is new, now this is a game changer, what would it be?
Yeah. So if you had to say recently, I would have said, hey, we animated radar in 85, right? Because yeah. radar wasn't even animated back then, right? Uh-huh. But when you say recently, that's a really good question. I think it's uh-huh. bringing everything together. If you think about, like, at my home farm, we are 30 miles away from uh-huh. a small town uh-huh. and 45 miles away from another town. And it's hard for us to have good weather data uh-huh. or the radar data is being pulled from 45 miles away. That doesn't really help me on my field to decide when to cut my hay or when to plant because, is it going to rain or not? Do I need to spray that chemical? So we actually, this was probably about 10 years ago though, but we installed weather stations on the field. And because of all our capabilities, because we're the largest commercial B2B weather company, is that we can actually forecast down to the field. Mm-hmm. So for each field, then I'm getting an individual forecast, which really makes the difference when you're trying to decide if you're going to, spray $20 per acre chemical on there or you have to respray it later, right? So mm-hmm. it really helps.
So there's crop harvest and then there's data harvest. Data harvest, that's become like a new thing. Do you think that that the growth that we're seeing in precision agriculture technologies gives more power to farmers or to software companies?
Oh, Rebecca.
Okay.
So this is a very, I love the question. Okay. I am going to put my farmer hat on. We are looking for information. We are looking for help. If you think about it, when you farm, you have so many different variables. Majority of those actions and decisions are disrupted by weather changes or variables you can't control, right?
Right.
So there's all of this like domino effect that's going on in your business. And I'll be honest, and maybe I'm generalizing, but I think we're very trusting in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, here, can you do something with my data? Do something with it, right?
Yeah.
So honestly, I am striving in my role here at DTN is to really, it will favor the farmer, but I do think that there are companies out there that are probably gaining more from the data than the farmer is right now.
Do you think there's an opportunity for farmers to monetize their own data and that data then becomes a revenue source for them? I mean, there's, you know, things like carbon credit or biogas. I mean, there's this, all this talk about finding new revenue sources for farmers. Do you think data could be something like that?
You know, and there are some companies that have been trying that. I also think about how busy farmers are, and just like, okay, if I do get another revenue stream of a couple bucks an acre, will that really help me in the long run? I think we need to look at more of the higher value creation ad, the upper right analytics. It's like, okay, when we bring all the data together for them that they have, how can we really help them with those personalized, localized insights for their decisions, right? I think those are the higher value that we need to go after. I am intrigued about the data. Can they sell their data? And then maybe there is a way that, 5 years down the road, it all comes together that, maybe there is a data stream or a revenue stream for data too. But we're focused on more of how can we help them get to the profitability higher instead of trying to find, another buck here and there, I guess. So.
Now, from the farmer's perspective and from where you sit, do you think that the emergence of these kinds of precision agriculture technologies changes land ownership decisions for farmers or maybe CapEx? I don't know. Maybe it becomes a better idea to invest in technology and rent farmland, or maybe for people who own their farmland, can they rent space out to, let's say, telecom infrastructure companies that might want to put sensors or, that might use their land as some sort of data gathering site. Does this change the calculus for a farmer in terms of their land ownership?
That was an interesting example you proposed. I mean, people are doing that, leveraging their land for windmills is a big one, right?
Yeah.
Additional revenue streams with the windmills. But how I look at it is I think the precision digitizing the data that was out there has helped the farmers make different decisions. And I think of two things that come up a lot when I talk to farmers or businesses. The first one is, there's this old tale that you think the more land, the better when you're farming. But when you have all that data on your fields and you can actually see the profitability, it's like, okay, maybe that 80 or those 80 acres aren't really worth it. And it's bringing down your revenue, your overall profitability. The other one is actually looking for land. I think, there's always been all these plat book maps and all these different, books from the government that it tells you how good that land is that you can't see from the road, like the back over the hill, but now that there's so many more ways to kind of be a bird and see what's going on everywhere, that might help you to realize, oh, over the hill, it's really low productivity than what you were thinking. So, so I do believe that those, that additional precision ag data or technologies are helping farmers to be more, more smarter in the different decisions they do make around land.
Yep. Yeah. So let's talk about, maybe we can get into some of DTN's functionality and so forth here, but talk about dynamic modeling and decision optimization for growers? I mean, there's obviously the physical nature type factors to account for, like weather and soil and insects and crop disease and seasonality, et cetera. But there's also these extraneous conditions that are maybe political, like farm regulations or trade tariffs, et cetera, you know, broader sort of macroeconomic conditions. Are those factors part of your technology solution at DTN? Can you sort of combine that into a synthesized decision-making machine?
Yes, it is involved in. I don't know if we're to the full automated synthesizing machine, but we're here. But yeah, it's all around, you know, in the past it was always, you know, what's the local elevator paying for your grain? Mm-hmm. And then what, you know, different tariffs are doing, right? But it's a global economy right now. So we do have our own newsroom. So we have, you know, quite a few reporters and analysts that are covering what the farm bill, the infrastructure bills, like all the carbon, but like all of these items, these policies that will impact farmers, just so they know what's going on, because there's so much, right? And what does that mean to the farmer? So that's what we really strive with, what it means to the farmer, but then also our agribusinesses, customers that we share or we serve, how can we help them help the farmer even more too? So we are, for sure, you know, since we have the weather piece, we're helping them on the, you know, the in-season decisions on the field. But then also the biggest issue, well, the biggest, the largest pain point we hear from farmers is, I need help marketing my grain.
Oh, okay.
And, and that's the area that, you know, precision agriculture technology, it's all, you know, I don't know if the right word is sexy, but it's like, oh, there's all these drones flying and selling, you know, it's all that's these
sexy.
Cool things.
It is.
So farmers, it's like, I need help selling my grain. So the number one point that comes back all the time is, give me tools to help me sell my grain at the right time so I'm confident, which all that regulation and policies play into, like especially with the tariffs a couple of years ago, a big difference in what price they were getting at the local market. So, so we strive to do that, but we always know that there's more we can do since it's changing.
It's, you know, it's interesting because we live in, when you talk about market data generally, I mean, okay, I come back from sort of financial markets and trading background, and you just go on a Bloomberg terminal and you see what something is selling for at a given time, you know, you see what a stock is trading for. I mean, information is very, is really flat, and there aren't very many markets in the world left now that have tremendous time lags or asymmetries of information. And it seems that farming and agriculture is one area where there's quite a bit. You mentioned, you know, finding the ability to market your grain. I mean, that seems like it would be the most simple decision. And yet, even in this hyper-connected, flat world market that we seem to be living in so many commodity spaces, farming is something else, huh?
You know, and I think you're right. Because when you think about, you know, how I sell my grain, and I have problems with this myself, but, you know, you got the futures market, right? The CME and all those. Yep, that's great. But there's so many local supply and demand factors in my local area that it's hard to understand what's going on. And weather is a big driver to all that. Yeah. And honestly, how many of us have actually sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth or millions of dollars online or with other partners, right? Uh-huh. A lot of people buy stuff, but not many people out there sell. So it's that emotional thing that, hey, I've spent all year raising this crop. How do I know I'm getting the right money for it? Or should I hold it a little bit more and, you know, sell it later? So I held my grain in the market, you know, after I sold some of it about a month ago. It was at $6, which is way high price for us, which is awesome. But then it went up another 70 cents over the next week. And I'm just like, why didn't I wait a week to sell it, right? So it's just, how do we get more confident in knowing what their break-evens need to be? And
Do you find that technology creates, in some sense, like a barrier to entry in an area like agriculture and farming, where there's so much, like so many agreements? It seems to me, from my very limited ancestral background in agriculture, that, you know, that there are many, there are handshake contracts, there are verbal agreements, you know, personal credit based on your personal reputation and the solidness of your word matters a lot. And some of that is, it gets a little murkier when you're online. Technology is kind of a wild card sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. And there's, I agree. I think there it has evolved quite a bit, where probably about 10 years ago when we were doing electronic, you know, grain marketing for between the farmer and the elevator, they'd be like, well, wait, I need to talk to my customers. I want that personal connection. Yeah. But now they kind of see it as, let's do the housekeeping mm-hmm. and do the automation of the buying and selling. So then they actually have the time to talk about more of the value add, grain marketing plans. What's your next step? You know, trying to get more of that that customer relationship instead yeah. of a transactional relationship, I guess. Yeah. So
let's talk a little about some infrastructure that that enables and empowers a lot of these smart farming technologies. So rural broadband infrastructure development, which is necessary for 5G, necessary for precision farming, as well as necessary for just basically living life in the 21st century, is an area that has been underfunded historically. It's gotten a lot of attention lately. And more recently, some of this investment has been led by the Department of Agriculture. They're sort of in the position of being an infrastructure investor in maybe ways that they haven't been historically. Do you see the USDA continuing to take on this role as lead infrastructure investor in farming areas in the U.S.? Or do you think there's going to be an increasing level of private investment interest?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I'd love to say both.
Yeah.
So DTN got its start in the early 80s by with a satellite, one-way satellite product. So we're the ones that created the information, that delivered information to the farmer out in the barn, in the shop, on the farm, where they did not have anything like a cell phone,
yeah.
no capabilities. So we started that connectivity for them mm-hmm. and then we've evolved over time, but the USDA said, I think 2 years ago now, that 25% of the farmers still do not have internet access. Mm-hmm. And then in our studies that we do with farmers, 45 to 50% of them do not have reliable broadband.
Wow.
They're using cellular, uh-huh. which is probably 4G,
yeah.
5G, of course. Uh-huh. But you're right. It's hard now. So I do see that, especially with the pandemic last year, USDA, yeah, I think they realized that, you know, in the rural communities, kids need, if we're going to have online school, kids got to connect to online school, right?
Yeah.
So, and I do see a lot of our agribusiness partners are using their, kind of their own infrastructure mm-hmm. or their community involvement into supporting more of the broadband or wireless or adoption of different connectivity. Now, 5G, 5G, I've always heard, is great in the cities where you're close to towers,
right.
but out in the country, you know, not as much. So, and I'm not the expert in that. I know there are quite a few companies who are leading the charge on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we support them. We want to help mm-hmm. Because it is very, very, it's needed
yeah.
by the farmers out there. I have a couple fields back on our farm that you're not going to get connection.
Yeah.
You'll get no cell service, right?
Yeah. So. Well, maybe satellite. I mean, what about satellite or some? I mean, I think there's
yeah.
been, I think there've been some initiative. Microsoft has been very active in trying to, you know, find solutions for areas that are not as densely populated to get, you know, 5G access. But again, they're one company. You know, they're just one. You know, one.
Yeah, and then you have all these the low Earth orbiting satellites
yeah.
going up.
Uh-huh.
Like all those guys. So we see our bet is, or this is what here at DTN that we believe, it's going to come, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's investing in that. We'll be positioned, though, to help deliver the information
yeah.
to help those farmers on those different ways to get that connectivity.
Yeah. So we mentioned the USDA. There's also, I know there's a lot of agribusinesses that have been, well, we mentioned Microsoft. There are agribusinesses like Land O'Lakes that have been very active in infrastructure investing. Do you, from where you sit, are you seeing the types of investor inquiries changing? I mean, I know that venture capital has been very interested in ag tech, and maybe larger venture capital has gotten interested. Sovereign wealth funds have gotten interested in some kind of food supply chain exposure. I mean, there's different types and groups of investors entering this. Are you seeing any particular segment increasing their interest in precision ag?
It's just hard to keep track of everything,
yeah.
isn't there? There's so much mm-hmm. going on. So actually, no, I don't see one group more than the other. I mean, you know, the big ones to me is consolidation. But of course, there are some, groups that are buying companies mm-hmm. with no assets. I mean, yeah, so there's, yeah, I don't have a good read on that. I just know that there's a lot of There's a lot of activity right now.
Okay, so other than 5G, which is going to come, whether it's some low Earth orbiting satellite constellation or some Microsoft thing that they roll out in the next 12 months, besides 5G and broadband, what do you think would be the most impactful infrastructure investment that could come out of whatever infrastructure plan comes out? Like, where would be the area where you would want to see, like, okay, this would make a big difference to farmers?
This seems so small, but it makes a big difference. Yeah. And honestly, I'll be clear, I don't even know if this is in that. I've not read it.
Okay.
There's so much. But the local roads and bridges are a trouble.
Okay.
I mean, they're a problem. Mm-hmm. So when you have, I mean, when you're hauling in corn, yeah, and you've got weight limits on the roads, or there's certain bridges, uh-huh, or, you know, I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, typical traditional infrastructure problems out in the rural community that needs support. Yeah. So,
yeah. And is that, so can you, do you have a sense of like the dollar value, like how much money this costs on farmers, like not having access to properly maintained roads and bridges in rural areas?
No. And I think it's, you know what, that's a good question. I think it's more of, you know, when you think about, okay, so how a farmer makes money is where they sell their grain. Right. So do we deliver it or do someone come in, pick it up for them? So how do you get the fastest to market or to that delivery point? Because you got to figure out all your net transportation, yeah, your transportation costs, your net price costs. So if there's not an easy way to get there, or, you know, at harvest, when you got to be moving the corn out of the field, like right away, yeah, and the roads can't support it,
yeah,
you know, it's time is a factor. And then they're probably, it's limiting their opportunities to probably get a higher dollar for their grain too.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's so much attention. I mean, I think in startup land or sea land, when we're talking about these next generation logistics solutions, so much attention is paid to the transportation, what the fleet electrification, supply chain logistics management, finding the most efficient path from point A to point B. But as you articulated, the road doesn't work, you know? It's, yeah, like all this technology is meaningless if the road cannot hold the vehicle, you know?
And that's very quick. And it reminds, yeah, me a lot about 15, probably 20 years ago, I was down in Brazil and everybody's talking about Brazil. It's, yeah, going to be the largest producer of soybeans.
Yeah.
Everyone in the U.S. needs to be scared. When I went down there, they didn't even have roads built, uh-huh, to get have, and I know they've done a lot, yeah, since then, but they don't have the right freight or the right trains, the weight of the train tracks to carry the grain to the port. So there's a lot of like, yeah, of course they got the land, but how are they actually going to deliver,
right,
you know, similar to kind of the, you know, sometimes the boring stuff really
it's true. Meat and potatoes. This is the meat and potatoes of infrastructure investment. It's not, it's been a little overlooked, I think, like, because it's not, as you said, it's not as, you know, it's not as sexy as drones, but I mean, roads are important. Yeah.
And I think, you know, and when you think about farming too, there's a lot of inputs that need to come in on pipeline or,
yeah,
barge, you know, too. So it's like, how can that get faster? So, you know, it's just, yeah, there is. It's a, like you said, it's a complex supply chain. Remember, it's in and out.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just got to rely on semi trucks and roads.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. Yep. The arteries of the nation. So tell me, so can you talk about any partnerships that you may have in the pipeline at DTN in the near future? Anything that you want to share with the listeners of Investable Universe who are certainly going to be interested in this exciting new data-powered world of agriculture that we're in?
We actually, in partnerships to me, I do want to kind of show a couple, I'll talk through a couple of things that we've done recently, yep, but they were more of an acquisition, mm-hmm, route. And then I can kind of go into partnerships. But yeah, we purchased a company called ClearAg, uh-huh, about 13 months ago. So it's astonishing that DTM, we're the largest weather company, but our ag plus weather offering. So really, what is the impact of weather on the crop,
uh-huh,
and below the ground? Yeah, above the ground, weather does matter, but it's also the roots are in the soil.
Right.
So is there enough moisture and however? Uh-huh. So we acquired this company called ClearAg that has all these proprietary land surface agronomic modeling. So it's really fun now that we can actually show them the farmer, yeah, it's going to rain, mm-hmm. but what's the so what of that rain? Mm-hmm. How will that help you down the road, yeah. right, to your crop? So that's pretty exciting. It's like a candy store. There's so much more we can do there. And then we just did one with Farm Market AD 3 months ago, where they're the only ones with the unique data set out there that connects the owner and the operator of the land of the mm-hmm. farm to the land. Mm-hmm. Meaning that there's so much of this behavioral firmographic data on the farmer, which means that we can help enable the conversations more between that farmer and that agribusiness, because farmers work from anywhere to probably eight to 15 different partners throughout a growing mm-hmm. season. And everyone's asking for their time, attention. I got to buy here, sell here. How can we help them kind of make those conversations more seamless and informational, mm-hmm. I guess, so that profitability is there for both. On the partnerships, though, we work with a lot of partners on how do we help kind of reduce the friction in the supply chain. Mm-hmm. So some of them are, you know, with ERPs. Other ones are for, like, you know, you mentioned Microsoft, like with FarmBeats. Yeah. I mean, so we kind of go to partnerships where our customers ask us to go. Like, hey, we see value of 1 + 1 = 3. So we're always exploring partnerships. It's a pretty fun time. And there's where ag tech is pretty exciting. I mean, agriculture is small, mm-hmm. where you're working with these companies to help a mutual customer, mm-hmm. but then on one part of your business, you could compete, right? But everyone's trying to help, you know, the mutual customer. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah. So you mentioned before we started recording, actually, that, you know, much of your business is U.S. centric. You have an office in Utrecht in the Netherlands. Are there other markets where DTN is excited to expand or maybe eyeing a larger presence?
Yeah. So our traditional agriculture and energy business or refined fuels business is in the U.S., mm-hmm. but we just did an acquisition 2 weeks ago with Online Fuels in Europe. So we're excited about working with them on taking some of our products more. I mean, the energy markets that we work in, we're deep in that market, but now it's like, okay, let's go deeper now that we have that acquisition, but then also bring that technology to the States to help our customers. Mm-hmm. You know, Australia is a place that we purchased WeatherZone a couple years ago, and it's just like, okay, there's farmers down there too. Yeah. How can we help them, mm-hmm. right? So I think every country is, we do have a presence at, but where we're looking at to go deeper with our, you know, more of our analytics offering outside of weather would probably be, you know, of course, South America is mm-hmm. always exciting. And then Australia and then probably Europe too. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of everywhere. It's just that, you know, we do a lot. How do you say it? We offer a lot more products and services to the mm-hmm. U.S., but we're looking at how to extend that.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a global market. And I wanted to ask just a final question from where you sit, not just as an executive at DTN, but also as a grower and a working farmer. How different do you think American farming is going to look 10 years from now? Maybe 5 years from now. I don't know.
I know. That's just like all the changes. It's going to look so different. Yeah. It's just, you think about the equipment's getting larger, everything's getting faster. The data, it's so easier to get the data off and on the equipment now. The additional markets, like all the, I mean, when you look at sustainability and, I'll just say carbon specifically, that was pretty hot about 15 years mm-hmm. ago. And then the policy didn't happen, right? And now it's hot again, yeah. right? So 5 years from now, just knowing how, you know, I mean, I think a lot of things are going our way, meaning that the technology, there's just a huge, what do you say? We're on the, I don't know if we're on the cusp of something, but it's just like, there's so many advancements in technology, the hybrids, the seed that we're using, it's just the yields are getting higher and higher. And then you think about the other revenue streams. This is so, such a creative market right now. Like you mentioned earlier, it's like the carbon, there's data, there's so many opportunities that, I believe 5 years from now, it will look a little bit different. But I'll still enjoy though going back and just sitting in my tractor and
yeah,
and going across the field, so, but maybe it'll be more profitable.
Absolutely. Well, the American farm may be the ultimate R&D lab. I'm ready for it. I think it's going to happen. I'm confident and I'm excited. And it's cool what you got going on at DTN. I think people should check it out. So if people, if clients want to get in touch with you, how do they do it? Or if they want to find out what you're, you know, like, what is it that you can do for them in terms of soil, crop analytics, weather forecasting?
Yeah. Thank you for that. I think the best way is just go on DTN.com. Mm-hmm. And check it out. There's some chat screens and phone numbers there, and or on any of our social media. Because yeah, I think we thank you for that. We have a lot of offerings to help people, and we're just really getting started. There's so much more to do.
All right, this is exciting. Mary Tangen, American agriculture economist and farmer. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with Investable Universe this week.
Thank you.
That's all we got for Investable Universe this week. If you liked what you heard, share the link, check out the site at investableuniverse.com, or pitch us for future episodes. The address is editor@investableuniverse.com. My name is Rebecca Darst, and you'll hear more from me next time.